All right, everyone, welcome in. You're ready to dive deep with us again. This time, we're taking on a big one.
A behemoth, you might say.
Yeah, that's fair. We're talking FAIRM, Federal Aviation Regulations and Aeronautical Information Manual, for those who like the full names.
We know it's dense, but stick with us.
Exactly. Think of this like a pre-flight briefing for your brain, helping you get ready to actually fly safely, which, you know, is kind of important. We'll focus on those real-world scenarios UGA pilots out there might actually encounter.
Right. Like, how do you know if your aircraft is actually airworthy? More than just a sticker.
Yeah, that's a great place to start. I mean, airworthiness is the foundation of everything we do as pilots. What does it actually mean?
Yeah, good question. So imagine you're prepping for a flight and you notice your landing light is out.
Okay, been there. Yeah. Happens to the best of us. Can I still fly?
Well, it depends. Are you flying with a minimum equipment list or Morel? Or are you going the no-mel route?
No-mel for me, I think. Sounds a little less complicated. But how do I know if I can just, like, put off fixing that landing light? Like, defer it.
Right. So FR not 91.213D, that's where you got to look. It tells you what equipment is absolutely required for your specific flight. You know, for VFR day, you can use the mnemonic tomato flames to remember the instruments you absolutely need.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Tachometer, oil pressure, manifold pressure, altimeter, temperature gauge. Wait, what's next?
Oil temperature, fuel gauges, landing gear position indicator, airspeed indicator, magnetic compass, ELT, and safety belts.
Got it. Tomato flames. But, you know, landing light's not in there.
Nope, not on the list.
So could I, like, deactivate it, slap a placard on it, and be good to go?
Potentially. But here's the thing. Even if you can defer something, doesn't always mean you should. Safety first, right? Like, what if you're flying at dusk or into a busy airport?
Yeah. Okay, good point. That landing light suddenly seems a lot more important, even if it's not technically required. So pilot judgment still comes into play, even when a deferral is allowed.
Absolutely. Safety always has to be the top priority.
Okay. So where do all these rules about deferring equipment live? Is it just scattered throughout the FAIRM?
Not really. It's like a step-by-step process. Think of it like a detective investigation, right? You start with FR 91.205, your basic instrument and equipment requirements, and then you got to dig a little deeper. Look at your aircraft-specific documents, like your kinds of equipment list. That's in the POH.
Okay, so that tells you what equipment is required based on the type of flight. What else?
Right. And then you check your equipment list, what's actually installed on your plane.
I see. So it's a multi-step process, but there's a clear path to follow.
Exactly. And don't forget about those airworthiness directives. They can also come into play.
Ah, ADs. Always fun. So let's say I'm selling my aircraft. I've been meticulous about those maintenance logs.
Always a good thing.
I know. But how does that actually benefit me in selling the plane?
Well, think of those logs as a health record for your aircraft. It's proof that you've been a responsible owner, taking good care of it. That can really increase its value.
Makes sense. Okay, so we've got airworthiness, record keeping. Now, what if I need to fly my aircraft to get it repaired, but it's not technically airworthy? Kind of catch 22, right?
Right. That's where you'd need a special flight permit. It's covered in FIR 21.197. Like, let's say your alternator goes kaput and you need to get to a mechanic 50 miles away.
Okay, yeah, I see. So a special flight permit lets you make that flight legally, even if your aircraft isn't technically airworthy at the moment.
Exactly. It's like a temporary hall pass to get your plane to the doctor.
Love it. How do you go about getting one of those?
You'd need to contact your local FSDO, your Flight Standards District Office. Or a designated airworthiness representative, you know, DR.
Okay, so there's a process, but it is possible in those specific situations. Makes sense. Now, let's talk about the big one. Pilot in command, FR 91.3 outlines the PIC's authority. It's a heavy responsibility, right? What does that really mean for me once I'm in that lift seat?
You're the ultimate decision maker when it comes to the safety of the flight. Following regulations, making good judgments, putting safety above everything else, it's all on you.
Okay, no pressure. But there's also the emergency exception in FR 91.3, right? Like, if my engine fails and I have to land in a field, can I deviate from the regulations in that situation if it's necessary to handle the emergency?
That's exactly what it's for. But it's not a free pass to ignore the rules. You still have to use good judgment, prioritize safety.
Right. Makes sense. Okay, so back to airworthiness for a sec. We talked about this certificate, but FR 91.7 says it's an ongoing thing, right? It's not just a one-time thing. So how do I determine if my aircraft is airworthy on any given day beyond that initial certification?
Good question. It's multi-layered, I would say. You've got your airworthiness certificate, that's the foundation. Then you've got your ongoing maintenance, inspections, making sure everything's up to snuff.
Right, staying on top of that. And then...
And then the most important part, your pre-flight assessment as the PIC.
Yeah.
You're the final set of eyes, you know.
So it's a combination of the paperwork, the maintenance, and my own careful inspection before every flight.
Exactly. It all works together.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's switch gears a bit now. Talk about the manuals and placards we have to have in the cockpit. FRR 91.9 spells out those requirements. What do I absolutely need to have on board?
Well, it depends on the aircraft. Newer planes, ones registered after 1979, generally need a full approved flight manual, the AFM, accessible in the cockpit.
What about if my plane is older than that? Still got to have the full manual.
Not necessarily. Older aircraft, ones registered before 79, might not need that full AFM, especially if the manufacturer didn't give one to the FAA. But you still got to have all the required markings and placards in place, easy to find.
So the key is having the information readily available, whether it's in a full manual or on placards.
Exactly. Whatever the FAA approved.
Okay, I got it. What about legal documents? What do I absolutely have to fly?
FAFR 91.203 is pretty clear on that. You got to have your airworthiness certificate and your registration certificate.
Makes sense. Like your plane's driver's license and proof of insurance.
Pretty much. Airworthiness certificate shows your plane meets the safety standards. Registration certificate proves you own it. Can't fly without them.
Okay, got it. No flying without those. What about equipment we need for the flight itself? FAR 91.205 lays out the bare minimums, right? Both VFR and IFR.
That's right. It's like your equipment checklist. Got to have the essentials.
We talked about tomato flames for day VFR. Is there a mnemonic for IFR too?
You bet. For IFR, think grab card.
Okay, cool. Grab card. But of course, those mnemonics are just memory aids. We still need to understand those specific requirements.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, so let's go back to inoperative equipment for a minute. What's that decision-making process step by step?
Sure. First, you got to ask yourself, am I flying with a aerial? If you are, you follow that for whatever piece of equipment isn't working.
Okay, easy enough. But if I'm not flying with a aerial?
Then it's detective time. You start by checking if that inoperative equipment is actually required. Look at your aircraft's equipment list, the kinds of equipment list, the VFR type certificate requirements, you know, the airworthiness certification requirements.
Yeah, that's right.
And then check if any airworthiness directives apply. Finally, got to cross-reference FAR 91.205 and 91.207, any of the regs that might apply.
So we've done all that, and that inoperative thing isn't technically required. Are we good to go?
Hold on. Even if it's not required, you, as the PIC, you still have the final say. It's not just about legality, it's about judgment. Like, what if your vacuum pump is acting up, but it's not technically required for your VFR flight? You might be legal to fly, but is it smart? Especially if you're flying over mountains or, you know, in IMC.
Oh, good point. So safety trumps legality every single time.
Always.
Okay. Last thing for today, let's talk maintenance. As a pilot and aircraft owner, what key regulations do I need to know?
Three big ones. FARR 91.401, 91.405, and 91.409, all about maintenance, preventative maintenance, and alterations.
Okay, a lot of numbers there. What's the gist of 91.401?
It's like the general rules for all maintenance activities. Who can do it, what standards they need to meet. It basically says you have to maintain your aircraft in a safe, airworthy condition. It's not optional.
Okay, so it's not just finding a good mechanic, it's understanding the rules of the game when it comes to maintenance. What about me as the owner? What are my responsibilities?
That's FARR 91.405. It outlines your obligations as the owner to ensure your aircraft is properly inspected and maintained, like making sure inspections happen when they're supposed to, any problems are fixed between inspections, all that good stuff.
Got it.
Oh, and making sure your maintenance personnel are documenting everything correctly. And if something's inoperative, you got to get it repaired, replaced, removed, or at least inspected at the next required inspection. Don't forget the placard. FAR 43.11 requires those on inoperative equipment.
So many details. Okay, so it's a team effort between me, my mechanic, and the FAA. We're all working together to keep things safe. What about 91.409?
That one dives into those required inspections. Your annual, your 100-hour, and other types. It tells you what needs to be checked during each one.
Oh, right. That's where those handy mnemonics come in, right? AV18T, arrow.
Yeah, exactly. Those help you remember the key areas to inspect.
But of course, those are just memory aids.
Of course. Always got to refer to that full inspection checklist and talk to your mechanic. Make sure everything is good.
Good advice. Seems like a lot to keep track of with maintenance and FARs. Anything else we should know?
Yeah, a few more. FRR 91.411 for static pressure system and altimeter tests for IFR flight. 91.413 for transponder tests, you know, important controlled airspace, and 91.207. That's about ELTs, emergency locator transmitters.
Yeah.
We hope to never need them, but they're critical if something happens.
Right, right. It's amazing how much goes into keeping our aircraft safe, airworthy. It really does take a village.
It really does. As pilots, it's our job to stay on top of all this. Work with qualified mechanics, you know, make sure our birds are in tip-top shape.
Speaking of working together, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the other half of our deep dive. The Aeronautical Information Manual, the AIM. Now, that's not regulatory like the FFRs, right? So what is it for?
Think of it like this. It's your guide to understanding the whole airspace system. Procedures, best practices, all that. It helps you, like, apply those regulations in real-world situations.
So if the THIARs are the what, the AIM is the how and the why.
Bingo. It can make you a more informed pilot, more confident, and most importantly, a safer pilot.
Sounds pretty valuable, but the M can be pretty overwhelming. It's a lot to take in.
Oh, yeah, no question. You don't have to memorize the whole thing. The key is knowing where to find what you need when you need it. For GA pilots, Chapter 4 is a good place to start. It's all about airspace.
Makes sense. Airspace, that's the heart of aviation. Knowing where you can fly, where you can't, the rules, how to navigate safely, it's crucial.
It is. And Chapter 4 breaks it all down. The different classes of airspace, A through G, explains the requirements and procedures for each one. It also talks about special use airspace, you know, restricted areas, military training routes, how to operate safely in those.
So if I'm planning a flight, I can use the AIM to figure out what airspace I'll be in, the rules, what I gotta do.
Exactly. And it's not just about following the rules. It's about understanding why they're there.
So it's about being a responsible, knowledgeable pilot, not just someone blindly following instructions.
That's the goal.
Okay. Besides airspace, what other gems can we find in the AIM?
It covers, like, everything. Weather, navigation, communications, emergency procedures, airport operations. Like, you need to figure out a weather report, learn how to use a VOR, figure out the right way to talk to ATC. It's all in there.
It's like having a flight instructor riding shotgun, giving you tips along the way.
Uh-huh, pretty much. It's a good resource for pilots at all levels, really.
Okay, so we've established that the AIM is important, but let's get practical. What are some key takeaways for our listeners, especially for real-world flying situations?
Here are three big ones I always like to emphasize. First, the AIM. It's your go-to for understanding weather. It teaches you how to decode those METARs and TAFs, how to spot potential weather hazards, how to make smart decisions based on forecasts.
Okay, yeah, weather's huge in aviation.
It is. Second, the AIM. It really gets into navigation techniques, from basic pilotage to more advanced instrument systems. So whether you're using landmarks or VORs or GPS, the AIM can help you plan your route, stay on course, arrive safely.
It's like a roadmap for the sky.
That's a good way to put it. And third, the AIM gives you clear guidance on communication with ATC and other aircraft, proper phraseology, all those protocols, you know, make sure everyone's communicating clearly.
Oh, yes. Communication, the lifeblood of aviation.
No doubt about it. And the AIM can help you develop those skills.
All right. So we've got weather, navigation, communication. What other practical scenarios does the AIM address?
Airport operations. It's got info on taxiing procedures, runway markings, those lighting systems. Helps you stay safe on the ground. Remember when you landed at a busy airport for the first time and felt kind of lost with all those taxiways?
Oh, yeah. I definitely remember that feeling.
The AIM can help you decipher all that. Taxi with confidence.
Good to know. And what about emergencies?
Yep. The AIM's got you covered.
Right.
Engine failure, fire, loss of communication. It's all in there. It's about being prepared, you know, knowing what to do if something goes wrong.
Right. Hopefully we never need it, but it's good to know it's there.
Absolutely. Preparation is key.
So we've covered a lot. Airworthiness, those pilot documents, what to do when equipment isn't working, the AIM. It's been quite a flight through Farum land.
We have covered a lot of ground. But remember, this is just the start. Like, getting your pilot's license, it's just the first step. The real learning comes from experience and, you know, continuing to learn.
So how do we keep up with all the changes in Farum? Are we just stuck spending all our time reading these giant documents?
Yeah, there's tons of resources out there. The FAA website's a good one. They have online versions of Farum, searchable databases, even videos and stuff. It's pretty helpful.
So the FAA has our backs. Anything else?
You got aviation publications, online forums, even apps. They all provide updates, tips, all that. And of course, your flight instructor. Always a good resource.
Okay, so it's about being proactive, using those resources, not being afraid to ask questions.
You got it. And the point isn't to memorize every single regulation. It's about understanding the why behind them, knowing where to look for info, how to apply it all.
It's about developing that ferrum intuition.
Exactly. Knowing where to look, what to ask, how it all applies in the real world.
And that intuition comes with time, experience, and you guessed it, more learning.
Always learning.
Well, on that note, let's wrap up this part of our deep dive. Join us for part two, where we continue to untangle the sometimes confusing world of ferrum. Fly safe, everyone. Okay, so we tackled the FARS, but we can't forget about its partner in crime. The Aeronautical Information Manual, or AIM for short. It was not a rule book like the FARS, but it's still pretty important.
I'd say so.
What makes the AIM so valuable?
Well, think of it this way. The FARS tell you what you have to do. The AIM helps you understand how and why.
Okay.
It's like having a really experienced flight instructor sitting next to you, giving you those extra insights, explanations that you don't get from just reading the rules.
So it's about going deeper, really understanding the aviation world, not just, you know, checking off boxes.
Right, exactly.
But let's be real. The AIM is huge. Where do we even begin with all that information?
Yeah, it can be a bit intimidating, that's for sure.
Just a bit.
Well, it's a lot to take in. But the key is knowing where to find the information you need.
When you need it.
So it's like having a map, but for the sky. Exactly. It helps you understand the airspace system, the procedures, the best practices. Gives you the tools to make those informed decisions, you know, navigate safely.
Okay. I like that. Where should we focus our attention in the AIM? Especially for us, you know, general aviation pilots.
Chapter 4 is a good place to start. It's all about airspace.
Airspace.
Understanding those different classifications, A through G, all the rules, procedures. Imagine you're planning a cross-country flight, right? Consulting the AIM, it can really help you. You can visualize your route. You see those potential airspace restrictions. Plan your altitude.
Oh, okay. So that's helpful for pre-flight planning.
Big time. It's not just about avoiding airspace violations. It's about really having that deeper awareness.
Makes sense. What other practical things can we learn from the AIM?
Well, let's talk about weather.
All right, weather.
The AIM, it goes beyond just decoding those weather reports. Sometimes those can be pretty confusing, right?
Yeah, tell me about it.
It helps you, like, interpret that information, you know? Recognize those potential hazards. Make good decisions based on the forecast.
So it's like becoming a weather expert.
Kind of. Well, maybe not quite. But you definitely get a better understanding.
That's so important, especially for us VFR pilots who need good weather to fly. What about navigation? Does the AIM help with that too?
You bet. It talks about all sorts of navigation techniques, from the basics like pilotage to those more advanced systems, VORs, GPS, all that. The AIM can help you plan your route, stay on course, arrive safely.
Gives you that extra confidence.
Exactly.
And we can't forget about communication.
Oh, absolutely. The lifeblood of aviation, right? The AIM goes deep into communication procedures, talking with ATC, communicating with other aircraft, proper phraseology, protocols, best practices, you know, all that jazz.
It's so important to avoid any misunderstandings up there in the air.
No doubt. The AIM can help you with all that. Build your confidence.
So we've got weather, navigation, communication covered. What other, like, practical scenarios does the AIM address?
Let's see. Well, it has stuff about airport operations.
Airport operations?
Yeah, like taxiing procedures, runway markings, lighting systems, all that. Helps you maneuver on the ground safely. Avoid those potential conflicts with other aircraft. Remember the first time you landed at a busy airport and you had no idea where to go?
Oh, yeah. So many taxiways, markings. It was a little overwhelming.
Exactly. Well, the AIM can help you decipher all that. Taxi like a pro.
I like it. Anything else? What about emergencies?
Good one. Yeah, the AIM has guidance on emergency procedures, too. Engine failure, fire, losing communication, you know, the stuff we hope never happens.
Right.
It's all about being prepared, knowing how to react, stay safe.
It's reassuring to know that info is there, even if we hope to never use it.
Absolutely. You never know.
Okay, so the AIM covers, like, everything, from the everyday stuff to those just-in-case situations. But with all this information, how do we actually remember it all? Absorb it.
That's where active learning comes in. Uh-huh. Don't just passively read it. Highlight things, make notes, you know, draw diagrams, make flashcards. Whatever works for you, the more you interact with the material, the more likely you are to remember it.
Okay, I like that. Active learning. Makes sense.
And don't be afraid to go back and revisit the AIM, you know? It's not something you read once and then forget about.
So it's like a dynamic resource.
Exactly. You can keep learning from it throughout your flying career.
So it's not just about rules. It's about understanding how it all works.
Right. It's about developing that intuition, knowing where to look for information, how to apply it.
That firm intuition. Yeah. I like that.
It comes with time and experience, but it's worth it.
Okay, so we've talked about the fares. We've talked about the aim. It's a lot to take in, but I think we've made some good progress.
I think so, too.
Join us for the final part of our deep dive, where we wrap everything up and talk about how to stay up to date on all things Ferrum. See you there. All right, so we've covered a lot of ground, haven't we? Airworthiness, those pilot documents, what to do when equipment goes on the fritz. We even took a deep dive into the AIM.
We did. It's been quite a journey through Ferrum land, that's for sure.
It really has. But even with all this, it feels like we've only just scratched the surface.
That's true. There's always more to learn, isn't there? This aviation world's constantly evolving.
So how do we keep up with all the changes to Ferrum? Are we destined to be, like, chained to these massive documents forever, just reading and rereading?
No way. There are so many resources out there that can help. Like, the FAA website is a great place to start. They've got online versions of the Ferrum. You can search them, and they even have videos and tutorials and stuff. It's pretty good.
Okay, so the FAA's got our backs. Anything else?
Don't forget about the aviation community. You've got publications, online forums. There are even apps specifically for keeping up with Ferrum changes. And, of course, there's always your flight instructor. Never underestimate a good CFI.
Right. So it's about being proactive, using the resources that are out there, and not being afraid to ask questions.
Exactly. And remember, the goal isn't to memorize every single regulation. It's about understanding the why, the reasoning behind them, knowing where to find information, how to actually apply it.
It's like building that Ferrum intuition, right?
Yeah. Knowing instinctively where to look, how the regulations apply to different situations.
And that comes with time, experience, and say it with me, more learning.
Always learning. That's what makes aviation so interesting.
I agree. Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of Ferrum, what's the one big thing you want our listeners to remember?
I'd say it's this. The Ferrum, it's not just a bunch of rules we have to follow blindly. It's there to keep everyone safe up there in the air. So understand the why, stay up to date, use the guidance in the AIM, and we'll all be safer and enjoy flying even more.
That's a great point. It's not just about the rules. It's about understanding why they're there and doing our part to keep the aviation community safe.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, to all our listeners out there, thanks for sticking with us through this Ferrum boot camp. It's a lot to take in, but it's all important stuff. Remember, this is just the beginning of your journey. Keep learning, stay curious, and most importantly, always fly safe. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.